You got a little time for me today? I won't take very long. The usual amount of time. Here, hold my hand. Let me take you through this thing.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. It's what you clicked on.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. Before we go any further, if you're a new listener to this program, first of all, thank you very much. You're a wonderful person. But I do require an oath of loyalty before we go any further. So I want you to raise your right hand. No, the right one. God. Typical. Raise your right hand and swear to me your complete and undivided loyalty. Oh, wait a minute. That's not for listeners. That's for FBI directors. I got that wrong. Sorry, got a little mixed up. Hi. There is something you should understand, though, very similar to taking an airline flight. There are certain rules and regulations that the FAA, whatever that is told that we must. So listen.
This is the Ron Van Dam Show. Thank you for coming. Your waiter will be along shortly. Please be advised that the Ron Van Dam Show has been designated as a non-smoking area. Please watch your step while boarding the Ron Van Dam Show, as contents may have shifted during travel. In clinical studies, the Ron Van Dam Show has not been shown to reduce cholesterol in laboratory animals. Exits are located to the rear on the left and right sides of the auditorium. The sea bass is steamed and served with a white truffle risotto. Mm. Illinois residents add 5% sales tax. Shake before serving. If dizziness or swelling occur, stop using the Ron Van Dam Show immediately. Proper ID is required. No cover charge after 10 p.m. Moo. Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show may require you to lift objects weighing 15 pounds or more. Please remain seated until the Ron Van Dam Show comes to a complete stop.
Okay, get it now? All right. Got that? Did that soak in? Good. Thank you very much. I got a question for you.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today?
So yesterday, I went to a location that served lunch. It was a place to go to eat. It was a restaurant. Thank you. And I walked in, and I was sitting there, and, my eyes are darting around the place, as they tend to do, because I'm over-observant to the point of annoyance. And I see these two men walk into the restaurant through the front door, which is a great place to walk into a restaurant through. And they're coming in the front door, and they're silhouetted, because it's kind of, sunny outside, and they're silhouetted, but as they get closer to me, I remark to myself, I say, Mark, and I'm noticing that these guys, I think they were in like their 70s or something, I'm not sure. They look pretty okay, but they were older gentlemen. And as they come into view out of the silhouette, I notice that one of the guys is wearing orange pants. This isn't proper. orange pants, man. Now, I don't know if he just came from a golf course, which is the only place that I could possibly figure that you would purposely wear orange pants. So I figured that's what it was. But then I noticed that the guy who's walking next to him doesn't have orange pants. That would be absurd. He's wearing banana-colored pants. Which is theoretically worse. That's a debate one can have. Which is worse, banana-colored pants or orange-colored pants? They both have their points. Right, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough of that stuff. I was going to order food, but then when I saw their pants, I said to myself, I can't eat. I have no appetite for life itself at this point because I've just been grossed out by two guys. They seem totally normal. I mean, it's not like they had zits all over their face or anything like that. Well, I don't know if 70-year-old guys are going to have zits on their face. That would be shingles. I felt like walking up to them and saying, excuse me, gentlemen, with the strange colored pastel pants, is there something wrong with you? Do you not have any kind of self-awareness whatsoever? Do you not own a mirror? Is it because you're both wearing odd-colored pants that you figure they cancel each other out to zero? I can't quite figure you guys out. Obviously, I didn't stop them and say anything because that's not the way that I am. I may become that, but right now, I don't do that stuff. I wanted to point out to these both these guys that pastel-colored pants are just not acceptable. They're just not. If you were living in the 80s, maybe, even then, maybe. But now, no. You've got to have fashion sense of your behind. You just can't. You can't. I can't even justify this in any sense of the word. I don't mind pastels. If you're an artist or something, you can work with pastel crayons and things. Or if you're a child in a coloring book, pastels are lovely this time of year. Or perhaps you're one of the Teletubbies, in which case pastels are quite interesting for the storyline. But short of those things, there's kind of no excuse, unless you're high. But I don't think these guys at 17 years old were sitting in the car before they came in the restaurant getting high, saying, hey man, look at my pants, man. Aren't they beautiful, man? I don't think they did that. Could it be alcohol? Could it be alcohol consumption? I don't think so. I think when they dressed in the morning, they weren't drinking. They purposely chose these pants. It started me to think about what I live amongst, that society is very odd in my world. How about yours? Now, most people are saying, Ron, what's your problem? So the guys decided to wear pastel-colored pants. How does that affect you? Well, because I'm a sighted individual, you see. I can see things. And that doesn't please my pupils. It's not pleasing to me. It's disruptive. It stands out too much. In the long run, no, it has nothing to do with my life whatsoever. I'm a very tolerant individual. That's a lie. I've never said anything that was more inaccurate in my life. So, just as a tip, in case it's early in the morning and you haven't dressed yet, please take note of my observance. If you're a woman, it doesn't even work then. But if you're a man, banana-colored pants, orange pants, wow.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast?
Ow.
It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
Adorable. That's adorable, isn't it? So, here we are. Here we are. I am on a constant battle in my life to lose some weight. I'm not fat by any means. I'm a tall man. I'm 6'3", and I'm tall. When I was like 18 years old, 20 years old, I weighed less than a gerbil. I was a 6'3" man or older boy, 6'3", and you could see my ribs sticking out. That's how skinny I was. And I wasn't bulimic or shishomic or Islamic. I was nothing of those icks. I was just naturally skinny. As time went on in my life, I started to gain weight because my metabolism started to change, and it didn't tell me it was going to do it. Now, fortunately, it did it in increments over the years. It didn't just do it the next day, which would have blown my mind. I'm not fat. In the eyes of the government, I'm obese. And I don't think they're referring to my weight. I just think that I'm an obese kind of person. Anyway, but I'm not. I mean, I'm fine. But I really, really want to get back to my birth weight, which was 5 pounds, 10 ounces. That would be nice. It would be nice to go back to that, you know, when everything fit, when I could have worn banana-colored pants and actually gotten away with it without me noticing myself wearing them. By the way, before we go any further, if you ever want to shock yourself into reality, get a large mirror. Not the kind where you have to hold it up or you have to look at a particular location to see the reflection of yourself to see if your hair is in place. I'm talking about like a full-length, full-blown, entire wall mirror. One that you just can't miss. Put that in a prominent place, and every once in a while, when you think everything's going well, turn toward that wall with the mirror. You'll keep yourself straight and realistic to the point of depression. I swear it's true, and you know it is too. Oh my gosh. So I want to lose weight. Oh, okay, Ron, let's get back on track here because I tend to wander. I'm a wandering Jew. So I want to lose weight. So what I've been doing I've been reading up on this. I used to watch Dr. Oz to figure out my health situation. Then I realized, oh my goodness, he's selling me snake oil. I've noticed a lot of people are selling me snake oil. Snake oil would be swampland in Florida kind of thing. Even the president is a swampland in Florida kind of guy, and he's in real estate. I mean, it really fits that description. So anyway, so I want to lose weight, and so I'm going online because, of course, going online is the answer to everything. It is the orb of knowledge. And I'm seeing that here's the deal. Here's the magic potion for me. When I get up in the morning, I do this show. You see, I don't know what time of day you listen to this because I don't know you that well necessarily. Or certainly I don't know when you're listening to this. Could be the morning, could be afternoon, could be night. You could be on the toilet for all I know, which is kind of bonding in this sense. But I do this very early in the morning. I get up early and I have an appetite. And rather than just have a cup of coffee, I tend to get hungry. So I eat in the morning, and I figure if you eat in the morning, you're okay because you're going to be working that off all day from the mere standpoint that you're going to be walking from chair to chair or from your car to whatever. So you're going to work off a little bit of that as opposed to having a large dinner, sitting on your ass and going to bed, you're going to get fat. But I decided that what I was going to do when I get up in the morning, rather than have food, I'm going to start eating cardboard. Wait a minute now. Don't get ahead of me. There's this food that I had when I was a child in an instant sense. It was the Quaker Oats. There's some kind of Quaker guy on the label of this thing, and he's actually rather overweight, so I don't know if that works or not. But I have decided that if I have one half cup of oatmeal every morning, it will make me regular. And I don't think I'm talking about my pant size. I'll go to the bathroom at the proper intervals, which is good for my system, apparently. I will get my roughage. I will get my protein and my fill of cardboard. It tastes like cardboard. And I'm not talking about the instant stuff with the sugar in it. I'm talking about staying away from sugar and just having the oats. You cook them for 5 minutes. You let them sit there for a minute or two, and you eat them. There's no taste to them whatsoever. You actually have to add salt to realize that you're putting something in your mouth. Otherwise, this would have no taste whatsoever other than cardboard. I've never eaten cardboard. I'm assuming that's what cardboard tastes like. This looks like little shredded pieces of cardboard. But I'll tell you, I've been doing this for 3 days now. Have I lost any weight? No, but I will. Because you don't lose weight immediately when you do this stuff. It takes a few days to kick in. You know what I mean? It's like anything else. I don't know anything else, so I can't really compare it. But I know that this is going to help me lose weight. I don't eat much of a lunch. I have nuts. That's not a comment on my private parts. I have nuts for lunch. I have nuts. I open up a can of nuts. Unsalted nuts. Peanuts, cashews, macadamias. All kinds of nuts, but they're unsalted. They're high in calorie, but they burn differently, and they're supposedly, like, wonderful for you. So I have a handful of nuts. And I have a lot of liquids during the day. Sometimes it's water, sometimes there's alcohol added to it just for taste, don't get on my ass, it's just for taste purposes. They have some wonderful alcohol these days, by the way. Vodka has come a long way. There's flavored vodka now, and it's not flavored with sugar and that kind of stuff. It's infused. There's no added calories, and they have blueberry and pineapple and coconut and odd things that I didn't even know had flavors before. But they're infused into them. It's a wonderful taste treat. It's also probably promoting fanciful alcoholism. I don't know, whatever. But I stay hydrated all day. I do drink a lot of water, to the point where I drink a lot of water. And then for dinner, I've tried to eat earlier, like at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not like, you know, senior citizen blue plates, whatever blue plate is. I don't do the early bird with the worm thing. I just have a small amount of a good balanced dinner, but I have it early so that my body has time to break it on down. So I just don't eat, sit, and go to bed, as I referred to earlier in this conversation. If this works for me, I will tell you that it does, and I will, as a talk show host, I have a lot of responsibilities. Actually, I have none. I have less than you do, actually. Which is really great. But I have a self-imposed responsibility to you to impart knowledge and experience unto you. I made that a little religious when I said unto you. That's the way priests talk. They don't say to you, they say unto you, which is very priesty. And it's kind of cool, to be honest, which is kind of cool. It's kind of cool. So I'll let you know about this oatmeal thing. And unlike Dr. Oz, I have no stock in the Quaker Oatmeal Company. I think that's what Dr. Oz does. I think he finds ways, you know, behind the door to make money from the things that he's promoting so everybody will go out and buy it, but he just does it in the name of medical help to you. He's not doing that. He's getting something off of this. Dr. Oz actually appeared before a Senate subcommittee about this, and he said no. He says, when I talk about stuff on my show, when I tell people eat peanuts, I don't have stock in any peanut companies. No. Really? No, you don't have stock in it, but you're certainly getting kickbacks. No, I'm not, Ron. See, I'm arguing with him, and he's not even here. That's what I do. That's what I do well. Okay, kids.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it, too. But sometimes he says bad words.
Let others say that water is just water.
Aquamira.
Each bottle of Aquamira, all-natural, artisanal, gourmet lifestyle water, Aquamira, contains only the finest hand-selected waters, gently and sustainably culled from free-range, certified glacial streams in fair trade countries.
Aquamira.
Skillfully aged in stainless steel, cruelty-free tanks, and quintuple filtered according to age-old Nepalese watersmithing techniques.
Aquamira.
Each non-GMO serving of Aquamira all-natural artisanal gourmet lifestyle water is allergen-free, safe for use on pets, and contains zero trans fats.
Aquamira.
Yes, let others say that water is just water. For the true discerning connoisseur, there is only one. There is only
Aquamira.
Find Aquamira water in handy 42 packs in the beverage section of your local convenience store, liquor store, or gas station. Free bottle with every purchase of a Take This Job and Shove It lottery scratch-off ticket while supplies last. Aquamira all-natural gourmet lifestyle water is bottled by the overarching beverage conglomeration corporation, LLC.
Drink plenty of water, kids. Kids. You kids drive me nuts. All right. I lived in a suburban town when I was growing up in suburbia. It was a Leave It to Beaver kind of existence. They called me Beaver. Actually, they called me Woodchuck. That was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to say. But I didn't grow up on a farm. My parents would take me to a farm that was like a couple of towns away. It was a working farm, and there were pigs and roosters and lions and tigers, oh my. And I was very taken in by that lifestyle. It stuck with me, even though I never lived it. I never fed a chicken. I never milked a beaver. Well, that can be argued semantically. But I had some attraction to the earth and the animals and the wide open spaces and the smelly barn and the hay with my allergies. Hey, I had some attraction to it. And I still do. I guess farming is changing a little bit. We're going to talk about a strange aspect of farming, and I'm not talking about the chickens and things like that. I'm talking about the fruits and the vegetables and all that. There's a different aspect, and I never thought about it, and I don't know how I feel about it. We're going to speak to Katie Pratt. She actually works on a farm. She spent most of her life, if not all of it, working on a farm. I love to talk to people that work on farms. They are farmable. They're farmable people. Let's talk to Katie and see if I can raise her. Katie. Hey, Katie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
Terrific.
Katie Pratt is a fourth-generation family farmer and GMO Answers volunteer expert. What is GMO, Katie? Is that it sounds like health insurance.
It's actually related to agriculture. The acronym GMO stands for genetically modified organism. Okay. Sounds like we're talking about a thing, but really we're talking about a process by which we can breed new hybrids and varieties of plants.
Okay. And this is, of course, safer for the environment, safer for our health, and better for everybody?
Well, certainly it gives farmers another tool in our tool belt to make us more better stewards of the environment and our natural resources. It allows us to do more with less. And the scientific community has really come down on the side of, yes, they are safe in our food. Repeatedly, that consensus has been there. I'm a mom and a food decision maker for my family, and so I believe, you know, the food that I purchase, whether it has a GMO ingredient or it is a genetically modified food, I'm okay with that. They're one of the most tested products that we have on the market. It takes 13 years to get a seed from the beginning into a farm field. So it takes a lot of effort and time and money and tests to do that. I believe that they're very safe.
Okay. And this is a plus for the environment?
It is. From the perspective of our farm, we farm in northern Illinois, and we raise corn, soybeans, and seed corn. So we have seen the fact that we can do more with less. So we are able to build our soil quality because we're not in our fields as much applying fertilizer and pesticides to control weeds, insects, and diseases, because the hybrids that we're planting may already have a trait that can do that for us.
Okay.
So by staying out of the fields, our soil is better, we're reducing our fuel usage, and then that continues to equate to the fact that we've been able to use other different types of conservation techniques and methods in our fields, again, to keep the soil and water where it needs to be. We've seen higher water quality, better water quality, and certainly GMOs are just one of the tools that allow us to be better farmers.
Okay. And there's no chemicals used in this at all?
Well, it depends upon your definition of chemical.
All right.
So, you know, we're all chemical. We're all made up of chemicals.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So when we go to creating or breeding a genetically modified organism. So take, for example, the soybean, the soybean that is resistant to glyphosate or Roundup. The trait that was used to do that came from a petunia. So there isn't glyphosate in the plant at all. It was a trait from a wild petunia that resisted that glyphosate when it was sprayed. And scientists said, hey, this might be something interesting. Let's give this a shot. And so that's how we got started with that. Other things that might be found are naturally occurring soil organisms like Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT, which is something that's already in the soil that helps us to control insects. And now that we've able to take that trait and put it into our corn plant, it's almost like we've given the corn plant immunity against these insects.
Okay.
They're able to fight their own battles, which then, to your point, means that we aren't in the fields applying as many chemicals as we may have in the past.
Ah, okay. So what you're doing, you're just infusing one plant to another.
Yeah, essentially we are. You know, we're looking to see how can we be more efficient farmers and do more with less. So how can we make hybrids, breed hybrids and varieties that are going to withstand, you know, the different weather patterns, different climates, different soil types and fertilities. And certainly biotechnology is one way that we can do that. But I don't want to lead anyone to believe that that's the only way. There are many ways that we create hybrids and varieties.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, is it necessary to state that it's a GMO product or not?
Well, I think that's up to the people that feel the need to do the stating, mm-hmm. if they need to. Certainly, we see those labels in our grocery stores yes. these days, and I really believe that it goes back to the individual consumer needs to be asking the questions that he or she needs to ask to mm-hmm. be comfortable with your food choices. Mm-hmm. So I think people should be able to go into a grocery store or restaurant and feel good about what they're buying.
Yeah.
And asking those questions about how is it raised, mm-hmm. who raised it, things like that will certainly lend itself to that comfort mm-hmm. level.
Now, is this only along the lines of vegetable farming, or does it have to do with everything farming?
So there's only 9 genetically modified crops currently available, uh-huh. with potentially one on the way.
Yep.
Most of them grain, so corn and soybeans, canola, cotton.
Yeah.
There is papaya, some squash varieties,
mm-hmm.
The potato, and coming down the pike is the Arctic apple, which is mm-hmm. a non-browning apple.
Mm-hmm.
As a mom, I'm kind of excited about that. Mm-hmm. My kids will eat their apples after I cut them.
Yeah, that's a heavy invention. I call it an invention, but that makes like total sense.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah.
I can finally cut an apple at home, and they'll eat it at noon at school. It won't
yeah.
come home all mushy. So I'm excited about that.
That's
one.
Very good. I mean, maybe they can work on avocados, although you don't grow that, but there's another thing that turns brown as soon as you open it up.
Maybe.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. I'm a little bit interested in you. So this is a family farming business?
It is. So I'm the fourth generation of my family to mm-hmm. farm, and I farm with my husband's family now. He's the seventh generation of his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up on a livestock and crop farm. Today we just have crops, mm-hmm. corn, soybeans, and seed corn.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just it's a good life to live, to be able to work with your family every day, to learn from them. A little bit of a love-hate relationship sometimes,
yeah.
but that's what happens in a family.
Yeah, it is. That's one of the downfalls. But so you actually, like, when you have meals, you actually have food that's just been picked vegetable-wise.
Well, so we don't raise vegetables on our farm, but I do garden. And so
okay.
when the garden is in full bloom, we certainly eat all the time from the garden.
I tell
people that the only time my kids eat broccoli is when they've grown it themselves. Otherwise...
Yeah.
They seem to have an aversion to it.
Well, it's vegetable stuff, sure. And all the fresh herbs and things, it's pretty cool. Must have some nice parties. Wow, okay. And you love this. And I guess it's like, do you feel closer? Did you ever do anything else professionally besides this?
I have been in event management
yeah.
In the past, and I still do a little bit of that through volunteer efforts okay. today. But... I tell people that farming is very literally in my genes,
yeah.
both literally and figuratively.
Figuratively, it's on your genes, probably.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I do the laundry, I know.
It sounds like it sounds rewarding. I mean, I've never done it, although I've had a little vegetable garden in the back of my house, but I know that when I'm doing that, I feel a certain connection to the earth that nothing else can really give me.
I totally agree. I think it's important for us to understand what it means to have... to reap the fruits of
yeah.
your labor, and certainly gardening and farming is one way to do that.
Yeah, very, very cool. Hey, how do we get more information on GMOs and about this this new thing that's coming about?
So GMOanswers.com is a great place to start to find all sorts of data, statistics, graphics, and other information about biotechnology and GMOs. It's powered by volunteer experts like myself. There's also scientists, food scientists, plant scientists. There's nutritionists and dietitians, mm-hmm. and everybody lends their voice to the conversation and answers questions.
Very cool. Well, man, that's great. It's been a pleasure speaking to you and letting us know about this.
Thank you for having me today.
Thank you, Katie. Bye-bye. That's fascinating. I don't know how I feel about that. I still don't understand what a GMO is. Genetically modified onions? I didn't quite get that. I'm a little concerned about mixing things up like that genetically. Cuz I think eventually you start with a potato and you end up with people. You genetically modify people. Now, if we can genetically modify people to be somewhat intelligent and respectful, then I might be into it. Because we need a lot of that. We need to infuse intelligence and respect into the human race somehow. If not for these generations, maybe for generations to come. I really don't know how you do that. And I'm sure somewhere in a lab somewhere, they're trying to genetically modify people. And I'm into that. I'm into that if it's to my benefit. I'm into everything if it's my benefit. And yours too. And yours too. No question about it. I must include you in everything I say in order to make this a friendly type of interaction between the two of us, you see. Because I don't know who you are. I have no concept who you are. I really don't. Nor do I really want to know. I get a lot of Facebook requests. I've talked about Facebook before. I think it's just a horrendous invention talking about genetically modifying people. That's what Facebook is trying to do, but not even in a hidden way. It's quite obvious they're doing it on purpose in order to genetically modify your brain. I mean, let's face it, they've already changed your social habits. You go running to this computer page to connect with people. That's screwed up. I cleaned up that. That's screwed up. I mean, when you look at it from the outside, that's pretty screwed up. I get Facebook friend requests all the time, day and night, night and day, you are the one. And I check them out, and I don't know how much you check them out. If you get a Facebook request, do you just go, oh my God, it's another friend. Now I can say I have 600 friends now. Now I can say that because my purpose in life and my only barometer of success in life is how many Facebook friends I have. If I can reach a certain amount, I will feel totally praised and totally supported by all these people that I don't know. It's a horrendous thing that we have fallen prey unto. But I don't accept Facebook friends unless I know who they are. I check them out. I check out their police records, their drug test. No, I don't do that. You can't do that. You could, but what's the point? Because I don't take it seriously. Why would I bother? But if the people who are trying to become my friends, if they are not friends with most of my friends, then I don't accept them. And I hit that delete request box there on the Facebook. Now, I know nothing about Facebook. I don't go to it often. When I go, I'll sit there for 10 minutes and I'll interact passively. When I interact, it's always with sarcasm. Always. I never interact seriously. Because I can't take Facebook seriously. If somebody passes away, I offer my condolences. That's about as serious as I'll get on Facebook. And then I back off because then I realize you're grieving and you're turning to a social media page. I know that you want to feel supported, but shouldn't that be by your real friends, not your phony ones? What are you doing? What are you doing? Sometimes I'll click on that little like thing, you know, just to show that I'm still alive. Do I really like what somebody said? It's passively acceptable, yes. Does it require my comment and my involvement? Never. It never does. It never requires my interaction, ever. But sometimes, because I get caught up in the social melee, I will click the like button so that I feel like I've somehow melded into society in a very ridiculous manner. By the way, there's a show on television called Fear Factor. Have you seen this before? There's a show older. People eat spiders and stuff, and you overcome your fears by doing these miraculously ridiculous stunts. And they've regenerated the show, and it's on MTV. And the host of the show is I believe he was a rapper. I'm really not into this stuff. And his name is Ludacris. And I'm thinking, okay, that's obviously not the name that he was given at birth. I can't imagine his mother sitting in a delivery room popping out this baby, and they say, what do you want to name it? Ridiculous? This is absurd? Absurdity? Ludicrous? I like that. I like Ludacris because we can call him Chris. Oh, okay. I'm going to call him Luda. So this is what this performer's name is. It's Ludacris. And every time I see him or hear that name, he seems absurd to me because I attach the meaning of ludicrous to him. That's why I think that a lot of people should formally be named asshole, because if that's the road we're going to go down, let's go down it. let's just stop fooling around and go right down the road. Because, yeah, if your name fit your personality, a lot of people would have ridiculous names. Ludicrous names, actually. Of course, my name would be Intelligence.
Are you aware that one in every seven Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
That's a public service announcement. I'm out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I hope you join me then. Until then, I wish you peace.